This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-Hour Energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
All right, here we go on a Friday. It is Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. And just like that, college basketball season for the three locals is over.
That ended quick.
Very quickly, huh?
Well, and by the way, both went like, from a basic standpoint, played like ass, made the comeback to be back in the game, ass. It was a real sandwich situation of, you did all that work to get back in the game just to fail miserably at the end. Why did you even try? Just get blown out into this thing.
Yeah,
that
man.
Quick, man. Quick.
Yeah, one and done. Both locals. Obviously, we got a ton to get to today about the tournament yesterday. We're going to do it all over again today in terms of in-show. We've got our first game tipping off at 11:10. And we'll have a show bet. We'll see if you want to just fade the show again based off yesterday. On the show bets, at least, would have been probable. So Baylor and Mississippi State's the first game out of the gate today. So we will certainly discuss that a little bit later
on that one.
Today. Fan Club Friday, right? We'll have Fan Club Friday in the 1 o'clock hour. We'll talk more tourney. We'll see who stops by. We're not sure. We could have a few random people stop by. And we'll do that today.
When's Duke play? Should we have Speck come in for a drink? Talk about his beloved Duke Blue Devils?
Aren't they tonight, or am I off on the schedule?
I couldn't remember. Duke, usually the big name teams.
150. It'll get bumped back. It won't start till 2 by the time the game. Yeah. So it won't start. But he's wearing his Duke hoodie today. Speck certainly is. You can watch us on video, stream, Facebook, YouTube, Twitch, X, Twitter, all the same. Make sure you subscribe to our station so that way you don't miss this show or Fesco and Dusty or The Drive as well. Obviously, we just said it. Both teams lost. So let's start with Mizzou, I guess, and how that game came about and how it started, how it finished.
Doesn't really matter which one we start with. They both have sad endings.
Yeah, let's start with Missouri, I guess. And their loss to Drake last night in Wichita. Environment sounded awesome, by the way, with plenty of Missouri fans, Drake fans that were down there. And a few people that I know that were at the game said it was a great atmosphere and a great scene for college basketball, which is obviously what you're hoping for in March. I think when we looked at that game, we said, hey, contrasting styles. We know what Drake wants to do. We know what Missouri wants to do.
Missouri can dictate the action is kind of what I thought, too.
And Drake wants to play slower and low scoring. And obviously, you and I both thought Missouri were going to win that game. I thought Missouri's side would win out, right? Like their scheme, their strategy, their style play would win out. Obviously, not the case. We said yesterday, even if you just looked at the final score and never watched the game, if you tell me the final score, the winning team is in the 60s, then that probably is Drake. If you tell me the final score is in the high 70s or 80s or more, it's probably Missouri. And it's an oversimplification of the game, but we knew that Missouri was not winning a game that was 65, 66 points. That was not the way. I didn't think that's how the game would go. I thought Missouri would win, but they played Drake style from the get-go. Drake controlled the entire game. That was the exact way Drake wants to play. We went back and looked yesterday. Missouri, what was it, one time this year they won a game that was played in the 60s?
Yeah.
So this, if I told you for sure that was the score, you would not have been as surprised. But
no.
How impressed do you have to be up from Drake? We'll talk more specifically about them later. But they truly instilled what they wanted from the opening tip. And you're right, Missouri went on a run late, made it really interesting for a bit. But too little too late, right? Like you run out of gas at a certain point. I thought Drake was going to run out of gas the way it was trending. And to their credit, they stepped back up and Ben Sturts was incredible.
I guess, and I mean, that continues to be one of the most impressive things to me, that you can just be a D2 kid, jump to the Division I level, and then start hanging with Power Four conferences immediately. It's obviously what makes the tournament great, or what makes the, you know, like just generally. Missouri's problem is all of their best players play bad. Like, not even just some. They were so out of sync. And I, you know, I'll put a lot of this on Dennis Gates from the play perspective. He made no adjustments to try to, like, at the end of the first half when they started to, like, get out of the break, play up tempo, like, choose those rebounding opportunities to, like, get down the court a little bit and get some shots. They were decent offensively. When they didn't do that at any point, they had no function in the offense. They kept getting, like, too deep, too close to the goal. And then it was just like playing directly into Drake's hand. More embarrassing, though, to me is like you played that, like they were playing their game. Hidden shots. Drake wasn't, you know, like they were frustrated. They had gotten the lead back for the first time all game since they were up like 3 in the first half. And then for no reason at all, they went back to the way they were playing in the first half, as in like stylistically, like, what if we just play Drake's way again? Like, well, that's not going to work. Why would you just try to like settle back into their style of play? And it seemed like they let like a couple of shots when it went that like 6-0 run right after they got back in even, then it was done. I mean, they were up 3 with the ball with 3 minutes to play, and with a minute to play, they were down 7. You're like, that's a pretty bad run there for 2 minutes. I know you can just miss shots, but you were playing some horrible level of defense or something in between there. I thought this was a Sweet 16 team a month ago. And look, maybe I didn't feel as confident about him going into the tournament, but I mean, there is no way to shake this. This looks pretty. This is one of Missouri's more talented teams. They were in a very deep SEC, and they never dictated the action against Drake, except for like a 3-minute run in the second half.
In fairness, that was the concern about the matchup and the draw, and why everybody was fascinated by the game and the two styles that each want to play, and you know which one was going to win out. I mean, we keep saying it, but that truly, like, if you want to sum up the game. One team wanted to play a certain way, the other wanted to play their way and how they can win. And the team that won got their way. And that team was the Drake Bulldogs last night. And it was awfully, awfully impressive. You're like, that was coming to your mic. I was still yelling through on the other side.
Yeah, sorry. Trying to help him.
On the camera. I'm assuming the camera. It looks like my camera's not working. Maybe that's what it is.
No, it actually is both of them. Anyways.
But no, just funny. Normally,
I say it back.
I was like, is everybody hearing this?
Didn't get that mic turned off.
Yeah, look, I'm trying to view. Okay. How do you guys, and you guys tell me, there's plenty of Missouri fans listening. You tell me how you're feeling too, because I think for this season, you had a year a season ago where obviously it's winless in conference play, and Dennis Gates was able to bounce back from that and get you to a spot where legitimately there was a conversation. I don't think backtrack now. There was a conversation end of January, early February about this team potentially being a top 3 seed in the entire tournament. Could this be the year that they match what they did in 08 or 09, I think it was, and get to an Elite Eight? That was like a real conversation. Carrington, I think semi-joking, but maybe semi-serious, thought like, no, they have a legit chance to win a national title. Like, these were real conversations people were having not long ago. And then
right into that Alabama game.
And then it kind of fell apart on them. And Drake, bad matchup or not, you know, it's not the first time that a team has had what is perceived to be a bad matchup and either lost or couldn't find a way to win. But they could not score the basketball at their pace, and give Drake a ton of credit for that.
I thought the game was more about Drake than it was about Missouri, the way that they were able to dictate the tempo. And then I thought as soon as Missouri made that run, I thought Missouri was going to win the game. I thought, okay, they figured it out a little bit. They found a way. Drake looks stagnant on offense. They aren't able to get anything, but they answered the call. I thought it was, I was really impressed, because I thought when Missouri made that run with, I don't know how much it was. It was about 4 or 5 minutes left in the game when they were right there and they had taken the lead, and then Drake answered. I mean, they were up
three with 3 minutes to go and had the ball.
Yeah.
Like, it seemed like they had completely controlled the action. This happens a lot in March, right? Where the better team, or the more talented team, let's say, falls behind, makes the comeback, has a sweat, phew, but closes it out. And then what we would come in today and said about their season, be like, okay, you know what? You made it a little closer against Drake than it needed to be, but congratulations. You found a way, even when you weren't playing your style of basketball, to find the win. I feel the exact same way about the Kansas game, by the way. Yeah. They were outplayed by Arkansas for a large majority. They got worked to begin the second half. And you're like, God, is this game already over? And Bill Self made an adjustment. A good one at that, mind you, that brought them back into the basketball game. He switched to the zone. Yeah. Everyone saw it. They played significantly better defense. They were scoring significantly easier off of those breaks. And then it fell apart. In the last 2 minutes, it was the same thing. KJ Adams got hurt, and then the game derailed.
Yeah, we see it time and time again. By the way, we'll talk bigger picture with Missouri at 11 o'clock and for their program as well. But as far as the KU game, yeah, look, we had seen it time and time again that the team imploded inside 3 or 4 minutes. And this one, unlike, I agree with you, Drew, that Drake give them ultimate credit for winning that game. I feel like Kansas gave the game to Arkansas in the final 4 minutes. Kansas was had no business losing that game the way it was trending with 3 or 4 minutes to go. The problem is, we've said that so many times this year about KU basketball. How many games this year did they have a lead late and fumbled it away for a variety of different reasons? And yes, the KJ Adams injury obviously played a role, whether it was from his direct defensive input that he would have had, or output he would have had, or just the mental thing, seeing your player go down, like your teammate go down like that with a serious Achilles injury. But yeah, man, it was still the same, you know. DeJuan Harris, some bad passes late. Hunter Dickinson, I don't know who the hell he was throwing one of those passes to.
Why does he always think he's Gary Payton? He gets like late in the game and then all of a sudden he thinks he's a Harlem Globetrotter for the passing game?
So it was frustrating because the switch to zone was a great decision. And Arkansas forgot how to play basketball for 8.5 to 9 minutes when Kansas switched to zone. They weren't attacking the paint. They were settling for threes, but then Coach Cal didn't want them taking threes, so then they were just running the shot clock down and not getting good looks, and that's what got Kansas back in the game and ultimately what I thought was going to cause them to win that game. But then what we saw so many times this year, they collapsed late, and it's a fitting end for what has been a disgusting season by KU standards, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
And what they did in one and done to an Arkansas team that I still don't think is even that good. That's what's crazy. But to Coach Cal's
credit,
turns out
the Kansas team's just not all that good, you know?
Yeah, and this is a KU year that I'm sure I speak for most Jayhawk alums. Like, everybody, now that it is over, you're glad that it's over. Like I told you, like, no, you want to win a game or two in the tournament, obviously. But now that we know it's over, yeah, can't wait to see what happens, you know, moving forward, because this was a very, very frustrating season for KU. And we'll get to the bigger picture questions with them, much like Missouri at 11 o'clock. Like, how confident are you that this is a 1 year thing for KU? We'll talk about Missouri and Dennis Gates' tournament track record now, which is very much fair game, I think, to discuss. Program builder, can you win the tournament? These are the two questions that are out there for both these programs right now.
When I go back and I look, because the same thing we did in Missouri, and I look back at Kansas' season, obviously you can make a very easy argument they had a much more disappointing season overall than Missouri, because they were the preseason number one ranked team in the country and just lost in the first round as a 7 seed. So things went south in a hurry for Kansas, and especially when you consider the way the season started and how everything was going at the time and the stuff that kind of came with it and everything else in between, you're like, what a disaster. I'm like, okay, what went wrong? Like, how did we get here with Kansas? Or there's one thing. Hunter Dickinson, and this is the weirdest thing. Hunter Dickinson is not a bad player. That is not how I would describe him. He's limited in some ways. He's a bad defensive player. I would certainly say that. I don't walk back any of the comments related to that. But their bigger problem genuinely is they completely whiffed on the portal. And I don't even think Hunter Dickinson qualifies as a complete whiff on the portal, by the way.
No,
because it's not like he's a bad basketball player. He's just a frustrating one because you watch him. And like I said, he tries to do some behind the back through two legs dribble pass across the court. And you're like, Hunter, stop it. You are not the point guard. You may pass. You also, you are a scorer. Your job is to be down low on the block and get some buckets. But AJ Store was a complete miss. Other guys in the portal were a complete miss. An even bigger problem probably is that KJ Adams and DeJuan Harris did not get better for two consecutive years at the University of Kansas. And if you just stall out and Bill Self's got you for years and you stall out, well, then there's always going to be a peak of how good this team can be. And that's where, like, all of those things converging is why you had the single worst season under Bill Self. I mean, this season was miserable. I got to think every Kansas
fan. No doubt. Yeah, that's why when we talked to Matt Tate, it was like there's a huge grouping of KU fans heading into the Arkansas game that were obviously ready for it to be over. And
yeah,
last night,
I said just mercy kill the season.
And last night, the final 4 minutes in particular is the perfect example, again, of why so many fans felt that way. The transfer portal, they have to go reevaluate how they attack it. And it's weird because from a ranking perspective in the portal, you would have said, like, obviously Hunter Dickinson at the time was the number one guy in the portal. I mean, guys like Griffin and Zeke Mayo were some of the top guys in the portal. AJ Store obviously was one of the top guys in the portal. But I think it's a reminder that it's not just who, quote unquote, is ranked higher and maybe the best all around player. It's how does it fit together? And that's where they have screwed up. The fit, it was not a good fit. The sum of all parts kind of thing, right? Like that was the issue.
Yeah, AJ Store, they AJ were the Store, number one and two ranked players in the drafts in which they were transferred.
Yeah, I don't think AJ Store just suddenly lost all his talent and the Monstars stole it, but he did not fit in this system when you played him with this player versus that player with that player on the court at the same time. It was a bad piece, and that's on the obviously on the coaching staff, right? Yeah. You have to find the right guys that fit your system. They also have whiffed on the recruiting out of high school a little bit here recently, and it's time for a complete reset. The only good thing for them is it will be a complete reset.
Maybe, no one's coming back.
Badunga might be the only guy that's back for the team next year, which is a good thing because you can see why you would be excited about him. But yeah, they obviously have to change their thought process and figure out why have they run into this, because it's not this year. You're right, it all came together and equal to 7 seed, but some of these issues weren't 1 year issues. Some of these are the last 2 years or so, and we'll talk more about Self in particular and how that potentially plays out. But yeah, man, this was yes, it's a spoiled fan base. This was miserable this year for them.
And your entire lifetime as a Kansas fan, this season is personal rock bottom. They were a bad team all year, so it turns out not all year, but like most of the year.
Yeah, majority.
They were the lowest seed in the entire Bill Self era. They got waxed by Arkansas the first half. The game was close to the end, obviously.
Yeah, there's a re-air of it right now on CBS Sports Network. We have it on just because I really want to watch it again.
Do you want to see?
No.
No answer for Brazil. That was the biggest mismatch in the entire game was Hunter Dickinson had no answer for Brazil and kept getting beat up. The offensive rebounding was maybe the single biggest story of the game for how they lost because they could not get aboard. And I know that part of that, and the broadcast kept trying to point it out, which
is switched to zone.
When you switch to zone, it becomes harder. And I understand that, but I mean, even that, it was a particularly bad effort one. Like, KJ Adams missed out on a long rebound because he started to try to break up the court rather than secure the ball first.
Yeah, and this is the example of they're held to a different standard because what just happened to Kansas this year is what happened. You're a 7 seed, you know, you've got flaws, and that's what you are. But you're used to them being what Duke is this year, used to them being what Auburn is or Houston is, and obviously they were far, far, far from. From that.
I pointed this out, and I think it's more than fair to point out for Kansas too. You and I talked about this with Missouri, and I told you they are more likely to lose to like a 15 seed than, or just as likely than to get to the second round of the NCAA tournament of the last 15 years is Missouri. It's not that bad for Kansas. Here are their finishes by year. They finished, what year did they, in 2019 when they had it vacated, what did they technically finish with that year?
Well, they were going to be the number one overall seed, but I don't know. The year there was no tournament. Remember, that was the whole, like, they would have been the number one seed. People, you know, we'll never know, obviously.
Let's just forget about that for now. Here are their finishes over the last, like, 10 years. First round, second round, second round. That's a bad 3-year run for Kansas. That's why it feels compounded, right?
Yeah.
Where you're like, ooh, you haven't even made it to the Sweet 16 in 3 years. Most teams would kill for that opportunity. The year before that, they won the national championship. Then second round, then semifinalist. Then they were Sweet 16 a couple of times in a row. Then, you know, like, so it's not, or Final Four a couple years in a row. So, like, this is obviously a really bad stretch too. When you think second round exit, gone in the first round, worst seed under Bill Self, it is kind of hard to like sugarcoat the current run, which is why you're saying like later in the show, we can talk about like, where do you go from here? Bill Self said after the game, and I think he's right. He admitted, he's like, we got to evaluate how we're going about our process.
Well, you have to. If you're not willing to admit that, then you're not solving the problem, and you're being kind of ridiculous about the situation. I think he's been around the game long enough that he knows status quo is not going to work, and they've got to adapt. We will talk more about it, because I also think, you know, it wouldn't hurt to have. I know he's got his guys that have been on his staff for a long time, and they're his guys. I think they need to move some things around on the coaching staff as well, get some fresh blood in there from a coaching staff perspective. I don't know if they'll actually do that, but I think that wouldn't hurt as well. And we'll talk about Dennis Gates on the Missouri side some more too, because he's positioned himself as a clear program builder. Nobody disputes that, but he's now got the, hey, can he win in the tournament? That, like, he's going to get us to the tournament, it looks like. Can he win tournament games? And that's what we've discussed, what the questions are for KU moving forward. I think it's very obvious what the questions are going to be moving forward for Dennis Gates and the Missouri Tigers.
And rightfully so, it would appear.
Yeah.
People might have questions for us. We tried to make three bets live during the show yesterday.
Yeah.
The one finished after the show, for those who did not continue to follow.
That was the Wisconsin one, right?
It also lost. We needed 3 3-pointers.
From John Tanjay.
From Don Tanjay.
I still don't know who that
John
is.
John Tanjay. He had, not kidding, he had 2 3-pointers and had shot 3 in the first 8 minutes of that game yesterday. He attempted 1 3-pointer the rest of the game, and he did not make that shot. That was the end, and we lost that one. So what are we thinking today? Let's just be honest.
Let us know.
Should I refuse to sit during the show if we're doing this. Do you got any trends or something? You got like something we can kind of go down the boat on?
Because I mean, the only bets I'm on really are, a lot of them are later on in the day. Like my best bet of day hit last night, just wasn't during our show. UCLA, no sweat. The only no sweat of the day.
That was your personal best bet of the day?
Yeah, it was on the video that we put out every day on 96.5 The Fan.
No, I just didn't know if you declared it your best bet of the day, or if that's a thing.
Literally said it in the said in the video. But
are
today,
we approaching like just F it territory and just I'm just gonna make a first 4 minutes bet or anything like that? I think there's
we can do that.
Mississippi State plays in the first match.
Yeah, they are a slight favorite. Baylor is 0-11 this year as an underdog.
Wait, 0-11?
As an underdog.
And they are an underdog.
They are, slightly.
So they're 0-11 against the spread, or just 0-11 straight up?
Straight up. 0-11 straight up. It's also 1.5.
And it's only 1.5, huh?
Yeah. But the trend did not help us yesterday, though. The trend said that...
Might as well just keep going with it, you know? What's the difference?
The trend yesterday said to take Louisville in the first half. But our guy, Tim Murray from VSiN, he warned us, are we really going to do this again? He said, don't bet the first game of the day.
I don't care.
He said, don't bet the first game of the day.
Oh, he can't stop me. Making bad decisions. No, this is like a parent thing. He's not my real dad. He can't tell me what to do. Maybe Mississippi minus 1.5 and then like a sprinkle on like a first bucket or something. Let's try to get a win in the books.
First bucket bet? Just a complete flyer, huh?
Yeah, just like a
text line. Let us know. We have to 11:10. 913-586-7965. Give us one other bet for the first game of the day. Okay? One other bet for the first game of the day.
You want it to be first game?
Because we want it to be settled during the show for sure, yeah.
That's why I was thinking, like, can I, you know.
Text line says.
Put a little flyer on first person to make a shot.
Text line says Memphis money line. I'm on Memphis as well. Problem is we won't have that result by the end of our show. That's the issue. Memphis hasn't played till 1 o'clock. So we're trying to find something that is during our show.
All right.
Go ahead.
Baylor first made field goal type. Mississippi State first made field goal type.
What book are you using?
He's on FanDuel, I think.
Okay. Total points scored in the first minute of the game. Over under 2.5. Plus money for over 2.5.
What? Such a
if you
sick
get one
bet.
Three-pointer, it's
just
over.
The sweat the first 60 seconds of the basketball game. I mean, it's fun. Yes. It's definitely degenerate behavior. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I mean, we can if you guys want.
That is such a
what do you guys think, text line?
If we're in that territory.
Specific. That's such a weirdly specific one.
You're not relying on one individual. Because look, how I got screwed yesterday, I forget who it was, but I bet them to get a 2-point bucket.
Yeah, you had in the
they went to the free
Montana,
throw line.
Right? It was the Creighton game. Sorry, it was a Creighton game.
Right. They went to the free throw line plus 900, and they got the points there.
Someone says take the Duke over. That game, again, doesn't start till 150. Trust me, there's other bets we like in the day. But
we're just trying to get some action during the show
in the 11 to noon window, because that way it happens while we're on the air. That's the whole point of it. Right?
Two or more 3-pointers in the first 3 minutes of the game. is plus 142.
Two or more for
yes,
huh?
Between Baylor and Mississippi State.
The three-pointers burned me yesterday. Do we go back to the race to 10?
I think for the sake of the show, I think first 60 seconds will be pretty fun.
For
the sake of the show.
Over 2.5 because it's plus money. Because you scored in the first.
The under would be brutal because you're just like hoping for misses and stuff. I think.
The
if over.
You get 1 3-point basket, you're good. If both teams score in the first minute, then you're good.
Yeah. So, yeah, text line, we are doing that one already. Mississippi State minus one. We are
minus 1.5.
Yeah, we are doing that.
Minus 110 on the odds on
that. That one's locked in. And then let's do a fun either race to 10 or first points in the first minute or whatever.
The race to 10 buys us a little more time. So who do we think is winning the race to 10, I guess?
Well, I mean, it's basically a pick 'em almost.
Race to 10, it's minus 110 for Baylor, minus 120 for Mississippi State.
We just going all in on Mississippi State again? We're going to make the exact same mistake as the Louisville bet yesterday?
Jeez. Maybe. You know what? Yeah, let's do Mississippi State. I think that's it. We got them on the whole game, so even if we lose this first one, we can still, you know.
Did you guys both?
We'll do a half unit.
Baylor,
you know?
Baylor.
Half unit, just to get our feet wet.
0-11
as a dog
this year.
Did you guys both pick Baylor, or did you pick Mississippi State?
I'm
sorry.
Mississippi State in my bracket, if that's what you're asking.
Cody, did you pick?
I don't remember.
Okay.
I'm not gonna pretend like I remember who I chose for that. I definitely had them losing the next game, I'll say.
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah. Sure. To Duke, for sure.
So I don't remember. Like, I wasn't all that hard up on which team I chose for that one because I don't care. It obviously was a pick 'em. Most 8-9 games are. This one truly is kind of a pick 'em.
Someone said take North Carolina minus 1.5. Again,
we got Mississippi State. We got Mississippi State raised to 10.
Okay.
We'll be sweating out the first 10. God, we had a chance yesterday. If he'd hit that three, we win the bet.
We're getting off
to a better start. It looked like we were dead.
Yeah.
And then they gave us hope again. A lot like Missouri and Kansas. They gave you hope again, and you're like,
they did.
When I'm not supposed to win it, it's fine. Like when, you know, you and I. Like, and you got an under of 145 and the game's pacing at 190. So what?
Right. Yeah, it's over. I mean, look, I will say the first half of the KU Arkansas game was as entertaining of a first half of the entire tournament.
100 combined points almost.
Yeah. Yeah. It really was. It was a pretty high level basketball game, if we're being honest, despite the result at the end. By the way, our tourney coverage on 96.5 The Fan, brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views.
Fantastic.
Up next, let's talk about a signing late last night that made you feel slightly better about your team if you were a KUMU, and it has nothing to do with the college basketball teams. We'll tell you what we're talking about next.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Next. Back here on Cody and Gold. Bets are locked in for the day. First game today, 11-10, Mississippi State,
sure,
Baylor. We'll keep an eye on that as well. Don't forget, though, the Basketball Madness does come to Kansas City. It's going on right now for the NAIA Men's College Basketball Championship, March 20th through the 25th at Municipal Auditorium. 16 teams, 15 games, one national champion. Bring the family for nonstop action and affordable tickets. Get yours today at NAIAHoops.com. I know our friends over at Baker University, they're in the round of 16 tonight. They already won their first round game, so congrats to Baker, and good luck against Oklahoma Wesleyan, I believe, tonight as well. Let's briefly pivot to the NFL, because late last night, as MU and KU fans were bummed and ticked off about their programs, there was some positive news we can all rally around, I think, and that is Charles Mennie is back with the Chiefs on a one-year deal worth up to $7 million. Up to is crucial, meaning it's a hell of a deal because that's only with incentives.
Dirt cheap.
We have been talking about Charles Mynheuu the last week or two. And a few people at times would say, well, why are you guys still talking about him? You know, he sent these tweets out. He does, you know, he's upset. And we said, hey, he's emotional. He thought he was going to get a big deal. The market hasn't been that. And so naturally, he's a little upset. That doesn't mean that he actually is never wants anything to do with Kansas City. We also saw the free agency play out. We know the Chiefs have a serious need at defensive line, still long term, even with this signing, but that they didn't do anything other than the Tillery signing, really, on the defensive line. And we said, why wouldn't you bring back a Mynheuu if now the market's not going
to
be...
Came crashing, you know, back to earth on him.
Because everybody saw the Turk Wharton deal and we're thinking, oh man, Charles Mynheuu is going to get paid. He never got paid. So he's back on a one-year deal. He can prove that he can play a full season. Right? Can he do that? Can he play a full season and then go get a multi-year deal? That's what he's got to be thinking. For the Chiefs, you get a player that works in this system, that is used to playing next to Chris Jones, that knows the scheme, and if he has a great year, he's making $7 million. If he doesn't have a great year, he's making, I haven't seen the base, I'm guessing it's like $4 or $5 million base. It's a hell of a deal. I'm not acting like he's going to have 15 sacks, but at the price and the player we know you're getting, I love the fact that he's back in a Chiefs uniform.
It's a perfect signing. I mean, I can't even imagine why anyone would have a single complaint about it. They aren't deep enough on the defensive line, and they can still draft two defensive linemen, three defensive linemen. I don't care. Draft as many as you want in a deep defensive line class where Chris Jones continue to get more expensive and older, and you haven't signed George Karloftis to an extension at this point, so he's not a guaranteed addition. Dane will have a year left on his deal. You're not sure if FAU is going to develop further. Like, if those are the questions, it doesn't change any of the draft philosophy, except now every single position of weakness they have. And we can talk about Mynheuu himself and what I expect from them this year, but every single position they have now, they've touched. They have touched offensive line, defensive line, corner, wide receiver, any position in which you had a question about whether or not they were going to need some player in that position. They've touched it. So we can talk about how that affects the draft in just a second. From the Mynheuu point, he clearly is the kind of player who does even better when motivated. And he was motivated before because he thought he should have gotten a long-term deal by now. He was deserving of a long-term deal and his big payday. And it looks right now Charles Mynheuu might be stuck as the kind of player who ends up on a one-year deal for the rest of his life, but he's only 27 years old.
Yeah, he'll be 28 before the season.
He was suspended last year. Or he's been not suspended. He's been hurt or suspended pretty much every year for five of the last 6 years. He has played 6, 9, 17, 11, and 6 games. If he plays a full 17 this year, it might be a one-year deal. But if he plays a full 17 this year, he might actually get paid this time, especially if he's productive. He had 7 sacks 2 years ago for the Chiefs. He had 1 last year, but in only 6 games. But we just know he works on the outside opposite Karloftis. Karloftis, Chris Jones, and Mynheuu is enough. And if you get better than him in the draft, then even better. He's a rotational defensive lineman with that kind of skill at up to $7 million. This is better than the Hollywood Brown signing. This is the best free agent signing the Chiefs have made.
I think that it's definitely
bang for your buck.
One of the two. It's definitely between those two. And I can see the argument why it's a Mynheuu. We've been talking about him, as I said, for weeks, wanting him back in Kansas City. But he has to prove that he can play a full season. That's why the market, I mean, it's pretty simple. The market told you, if you're Charles Mynheuu, what you're worth. It wasn't just one team screwing you over. The league said, hey man, you got to show us, whether it's injury related or suspension related, that you can stay on the field. And that's why he played in 6 games last year and he had 1 sack. The year before, 11 games and 7 sacks. And so if you're the Chiefs, you're hoping you can get 17 games out of this guy who is coming off a full year by the time they play again, post ACL. So you're gonna have hopefully a healthy player that's fresh and ready to roll right out of the gate. If he can go out there, can he get you 6 to 8 sacks? I don't think that's out of the question. I really don't. He had 7 sacks in 11 games. If he plays the full season, I think 6 to 8 sacks is in play.
I actually think that should be your Charles expectation.
Yeah, that's the range. That's the range for him. And if he does that, that is a huge boost for them across the season while you can ease in a rookie that you draft. But it definitely allows them even more so to take a true best player available if it's somebody you didn't expect to be there. Otherwise, I'm with you where, hey, draft a defensive lineman because you still need long-term answers at pick 31.
But if there's someone from another position that you never thought would be there at 31, now I think it's easier to take that player because for at least the 2025 team, you know what your defensive line is looking like, but not beyond 2025. So you still need to address it because there's a good chance Charles Omeniyi who's not back after this year. But if you would have predicted when free agency opened up that Omeniyi was back on this deal, we all would have been like, you're crazy. You're crazy. It's coming out of 1 year, $7 million.
When free agency hit? No. And then even when the market came back down to earth, I thought, okay, what's he going to get? Like a 2 for 20, 1 for 10, up to seven. So like, they don't even have to pay him all. They're like pushing part of this money down the road on him and it's incentive based. So if he gets hurt, they're not even on the hook. And look, that's always a risk. I'll say the one thing that is probably the most concerning about a lot of their free agent signings is Hollywood Brown, injury prone. Charles Omeniyi, injury prone. Like, these are not players who have stayed healthy, okay? Like,
that's why you're getting them on the deals you're getting them. You know?
These are not players who have done a very good job staying on the field. If this time, and like, they got Rice coming off an injury, so they've clearly decided to invest a decent amount, I would say, of their free agency dollars in the hope these guys don't get hurt department. And I'm not saying that's not a risk, but that's also, like you said, to the point, why you're getting them so cheap. Why they're a deal. But yeah, I agree with you. Now that the first round's out, other than the normal ones that I hate, running back, safety, linebacker, if it is not one of those three in the first round, I'm good.
Yeah.
I'm good.
Yeah.
I can officially say I'm good because they've at least touched every position. They have four people who start across the defensive line. They have three corners or four corners who start. If they had to play football 5 days from now against a team, they could field a qualified NFL roster at every position. So, like, yeah, and barring those three positions, I'm good.
And they'd be a favorite against all but maybe one team in the league at this point with their current roster. So still got a whole draft to work, and that's where Brett Veach historically has done some of his best work, especially at some of the positions we're talking about. Now, left tackle thing is always going to be banking on now for this season, Jalen Moore. And he spoke yesterday to the media a little bit. He's obviously confident and excited for the opportunity, right? I think the exact quote from Jalen Moore yesterday was, I'm going to go, quote, balls to the wall for this team.
I like that.
Yeah.
Not half-assing it.
No. Nope.
From that. Look, he's an unknown too because he did a really nice job starting in place of an all-pro left tackle. And at least in my brain, I can make the excuse to be like, because most of the time, well, why are they letting him go? Well, because they have Trent Williams. It's not that hard to figure out why they're letting their left tackle walk. And when I looked at the other deals, man, it's tough. It's tough. I love this deal. Even more than a lot, there's questions I have about a lot of fringe deals based on dollar amount. They did great with Hollywood Brown. They did great with Omeniyi. They got steals on those. And Omeniyi, they got a steal because they're just willing to wait, not meet his number. He clearly wanted more and would have taken more from somewhere else.
They said, go test the market, man. Go test the market. That's unfortunately not what we're going to pay you. And the market agreed, clearly. Coming up in 20 minutes, we'll get back to KU and MU, talk bigger picture, the questions that surround Dennis Gates moving forward and his tournament lack of success, and obviously the questions around Bill Self in the NIL era and where this program sits. So that's coming up in 20 minutes. If you're expecting some KU MU talk, we'll get right back into that. But I do want to give a little bit of time to Drake and all the KC connections is why. Not only is it just a great story, even if it didn't have the KC connection, because it's a coach that came from D2 that won 30-plus games and now is advanced to the round of 32. And that in its own right, every year in the tournament would be a team we talk about, much like we talked about Oakland last year. But here, we're in a unique spot because not only is it the team everybody's talking about along with McNeese, I would say those are the two teams people are talking about today after upset wins, but the ties to Kansas City are pretty darn cool. And we were joking with Carrington during the break or whatever. He's all in on Drake now that his Missouri Tigers are out because multiple high schools
quick fast.
Because multiple high schools from the area are represented, right? Multiple kids were not even recruited, including Ben Sturtz, from any of these local schools, from any D1 program, I guess, in his case, to now see them thriving.
Screw that up, Ruse.
Is pretty darn cool. Yeah, we can get to that here if you want. That story is going to be really, really cool to follow, and it continues to be that. And I imagine there will be a lot of people in this area that, if they weren't before because of the playing MU, that will be continuing to pull for Drake tomorrow in Wichita against a very good Texas Tech team. They're going to have to pull off something again. But it's hard to think that they can't make Texas Tech also play their style play. They'll have
to do it. They made Missouri do it.
They'll have to do it again, right? But that's, we know the formula.
And that's what was so impressive is Drake had done that to so many teams this year. And I had questioned whether or not they could do that against Missouri. I was obviously wrong. Their style won out. They won. You and I both thought Missouri was going to win. But now, I mean, yeah, why can't they do that same thing? I don't know if I'm yet to going to pick Drake to win yet against Tech, but why can't they do that exact same thing to Texas Tech tomorrow afternoon or tomorrow night?
I mean, there's no reason based on what I just saw to guess it anymore or predict that they can't do it because they needed to see it against a high-level competition, high-level offense. And so they did that, right? So once they accomplished that, I didn't feel some need to be like, oh, okay, let's make sure. No, they can do it against Tech if they play their game, play well, and do that. I'm blown away by what Ben McCollum did. I've seen plenty of guys go from smaller schools, make an adjustment, and be really good. And yet, what I've seen out of him lately is he took a D2 school, took all of his players. He is the first head coach in NCAA history to play 9 guys in an NCAA tournament game who were not on the roster last year and win one. He took 9 guys who were not on Drake basketball last year, the only 9 guys he played, and he went out and beat a Power 4 program in the first round of the NCAA tournament. That's incredible what Ben McCollum's doing. And yeah, it speaks a lot to like sometimes like under-recruited guys and the people who slip through the cracks. Because when you watch him, you're like, oh, yeah, Sturz can play with any of these guys. So, like, he should have been recruited heavier. And now he's probably loyal as hell to Ben McCollum. Thank for Ben McCollum's sake. Because otherwise, a bunch of power programs would be looking to steal him from you. But
well,
you took
when McCollum takes his next job, Sturz is going with him.
The good news is for McCollum is you're less likely to lose that kid than a lot of programs because you loved him at D2. You took him at Northwest Missouri State. You don't have to take everybody with you when you go to the D1 level, right? You were just coaching at a different level of college basketball. No, I took them all and said, you guys can win here too, and proved all the kids right in doing so. I got to say, watching Drake win last night is depressing as a UMKC fan. Because multiple times, not kidding, multiple times when Ben McCollum was having all of his success at Northwest Missouri State, I saw and thought it was a good idea as UMKC went through more than one coaching change. At the time, Ben McCollum was at UMKC. And it was like, they should just hire this guy. Look how good he is. And it's like, even then, at UMKC, somehow there was this like stigma, the idea that you'd be hiring a D2 head coach would be a bad thing instead of like an assistant coach in a D1 program. They screwed up. Yeah. Ruse, why didn't you recruit this kid? Why didn't you just hire Ben McCollum? What the hell?
Yeah,
and I know they're recruiting against Northwest Missouri State, not against other power programs.
Correct, and that's the issue. The same conversation came up a couple years back when Loyola Chicago made their run to the Final Four, and they had a couple KC kids on their team as well. And it's like, wait a second, they're right here in your backyard. I think the challenge, not to get too deep into UMKC basketball, but the challenge for them is what you said. It's not. It is viewed as one of the worst jobs in the country.
I mean, it is one of the worst jobs in the country. I don't even think that's unfair.
Other than
Kansas City's a decent recruiting base,
right?
If you'd actually be willing to recruit any of the people who go to Missouri State or Loyola or anywhere else, but they don't want to stay here because of their programs.
Yeah, I was going to get to it. I was like, the problem is, if let's use Ben Sturz as the example. Would you rather go to North Missouri State where they've won a couple national titles with this coach or go to the UMKC where they have no success? History of success, right? Like, none at all.
They put a couple guys in the NBA in like the 90s.
And so if you're at that low level D1, you can go to the highest level of D2, which is what Northwest Missouri State had been. And so it's a tough sell, man. It takes a massive shift. It needs you to start donating NIL money, Cody, to your ruse, you know, lots and lots of money. But yes, there's plenty of talent in Kansas City. In the last, 6 years now, we've seen 2 mid-major programs go KC heavy and lead to great success. We don't know what the end of the run's going to look like for Drake.
Yeah.
Could it go to Sweet 16? Maybe. For Loyola, it results in the Final Four appearance. So, yeah, I mean, can't count them out, that's for sure. I Texas Tech, I have gone pretty far in the tournament, so I'm obviously going to be pulling for them a little bit for a bracket sake. But acting like Drake can't win would be foolish now. They just showed us against an SEC team what they can do. I question it, like, big deal. They did it to K-State in the year. K-State wasn't any good. So I was like, okay, that's different. They did this to Missouri, who for a while people thought was a legit 3 or 4 seed in the tournament early on.
Do you think inside of 7 years, Ben McCollum will have one of the 20 best jobs in the country?
By win, sorry?
By next win? 7 years.
one of the top 20 jobs in the country? Yeah, I think so.
I'm not saying that. I'm not like fully locking you into blue blood, right? Yeah. Like, but like Texas, right? Texas is a top 20 job in the country, right?
I don't know.
Resources alone, dude.
If we're talking about
the SEC and resources, are they a top 20 winning program right now? No, it's a top 20 job.
Because of the resources, Texas is a top 20 job in the country.
Because you're going to try to tell me some like team who wins more is a better job than Texas, and it's
just
not.
Just because they're not ranked in the top 20 doesn't mean they're not a top 20 job, right? Like, just like Indiana hasn't been relevant in a while, it's still a top 20 job in the country. Indiana is. It is.
Is it?
I think
that,
so.
That where I'm
financially, more financially and resources.
I use a better job than Texas. 100%.
No.
Yes, it is.
No.
Yes, it is.
Adamantly disagree against that. I mean, and well, look.
But to answer your initial question, yes, he will have a top 20 job in college basketball at some point in the next 5 to 7 years. Yes.
Why is Indiana a better job?
Drew?
I mean, I think if we're talking just resources,
Texas has more resources.
Texas might be a better program than freaking Kansas. If we're talking resources,
it's a combination.
If we're talking resources, Texas is a top 5 job in the country. Resources. If you were to label 30 programs in college basketball, I don't know if Texas is in the top 20 in terms of, yes, I would take this job as a college basketball coach. I don't think Texas is in the top 20.
I mean,
there's a number of other jobs that I think would get rattled off, including maybe some mid-majors that would go before Texas.
No, like, no, stop. No, no, that's not.
See,
no,
that's where
no,
you're just wrong.
No.
Including mid-majors.
Xavier, unless
you're going to tell me Gonzaga or something, tell me one mid-major.
Gonzaga is actually going to be the example that I used. You're going to take
the most successful mid-major program in college basketball history. Yes, they're in the conversation. Gonzaga is not a better job than Texas, though. It's the closest you can make to the comp for being a mid-major. I completely disagree.
If Jim McCollum was sitting in a room and they offered him Gonzaga or Texas, he would take Texas.
Absolutely.
Without
he's
thinking
not,
about
yeah,
it.
100%. 100%.
Well, yeah, he's going to get paid more. Duh.
No.
Again, if we're talking resources.
Equal money.
If we're talking resources, Texas is a way, way, way better job than Gonzaga. That's why they all take those jobs.
Texas is also way more successful than Indiana.
They're in the SEC. He's not playing in the, what is it now, the WAC?
I understand that, but if you're talking about legitimate success within your job, you are more likely to have more success at Gonzaga overall than you will at Texas.
I mean,
well, that's also a different conversation. That's also a different conversation, right?
Because Marquette, that's a better job.
That's a different conversation. We're arguing about who's a good fit now. What you're saying is more of a fit thing. Shaka Smart, right? Texas, great job for him to get hired to. He was a bad fit at Texas, and he's having success at Marquette. They're going to play later on today as a 7 seed. He's done great things at Marquette. It doesn't mean Marquette's a better job than Texas. For him, Marquette is a better fit. I think fits up for debate.
Drew, like, just out of curiosity, based on everything you're arguing, if it's just like odds of success, then why isn't Texas a better job than Indiana? Texas has been to the tournament, not kidding, I counted it, twice as often as Indiana over the last 25 years.
Because I think
Indiana better?
Because if they hired the right coach.
Nah, see, that's loser program talk. That's why it's not a better job. If we just got the right guy, we'd be better than Texas.
Indiana has been ranked number one more recently than Texas has been.
Ranked number one, I don't care. They've gone into the tournament.
They've
been successful.
They've been in the national title conversation more often than Texas has, even as much as they've sucked.
Once? I mean, once versus once? I mean, I don't think it's way more, man. I think you're more likely to have success at Indiana
than you are at Texas.
No way.
You're more likely to have success at Marquette than you are at Texas.
Oh, no.
You're more likely to have success at Gonzaga than you are at Texas.
But true. If all of those things are true, then why have all of those teams done worse than Texas?
Marquette's done than Texas the last 5 years.
They have. No. Nah, see, now you're going to shrink the sample size. I give you a 20-year sample size, and over 20 years, all of those programs are worse than Texas. If all of them are more likely to have
Texas
success at Texas, why are those teams more likely to do it?
When is the last time Texas made the Elite Eight?
I don't know. They were in the regional final 3 years ago in 2022.
2022, they made the regional. They made the Elite Eight
2 years ago.
Okay.
So
what just happened to their head coach? He's fired.
Yeah, he got fired for other. Didn't he run into some stuff?
He
didn't get fired for success, right?
Rodney,
or he took a better job.
Rodney,
that's what it was.
Rodney Perry.
Terry.
Took over, Terry. Terry. Thank you. He took over midseason because Chris Beard
with got all arrested. Of the resources and the roster, mind you, sure, that Chris Beard had, and he is now fired.
But again, we're discussing, again, I think we're back to the fit thing, Drew. No offense. Like, we're back to the fit thing, which is because a coach doesn't work out at a program doesn't mean the job sucks. Maybe, again, I conceded the point to you that Shaka Smart is a better coach at Marquette than he is at Texas. That I think we all agree with. And it doesn't mean that Texas was a worse job. For him, it was a worse job. Like, fit is so crucial with some guys, and we do this in college football too, right? Some college football coaches can succeed better at, I'll use Kansas. Like, Lance Leipold is you know, versus Eli Drinkwitz versus Chris Klieman. Chris Klieman is an unbelievable fit at Kansas State and has done great things. Would Chris Klieman have had the same success at throw out a program? I don't care. I have no idea, right? Like, some coaches can have success anywhere, no doubt, right? Nobody's saying, like, if Coach K was coaching some other program, he wouldn't have won a bunch of games. Of course he would. Sure. But there are some coaches, like Shaka Smart, that Texas was a really bad fit. It's a foot, you know, it's more of a football school, if that's the argument you want to make as well.
A lot of pressure to succeed right away, so they'll fire you quicker.
There's pressure to succeed. That's why Brian Terry's gone. That's why he's gone, is because there's more pressure. There's more expectation. Dennis Gates is not going to get fired from Missouri. If they don't make the tournament next year, he might.
Wait, are you saying Missouri's now a better job than Texas too?
No. I'm just giving you the example of there's more pressure at certain programs. Like, to me right now, would you say Alabama is a better job? Alabama basketball, is it a better job than Texas basketball?
No. No, it is
that
not.
That makes no sense.
You're just basing it off of recent success. That is not how. If we're just doing that, when you're
one
right, like top 25 rankings,
a better job than Missouri.
No. There, Alabama hired a head coach, great fit, Nate Oates from Buffalo. He's having great success. If a blue blood program opened up, he would leave just as quickly as he would leave if he was at another school. Like, it's you are just talking about Alabama has had 5 years in a row now of success. Prior to that, they were dog crap.
I understand dog that, crap. But I'm talking about if we're looking at the resources conversation. Alabama has as many resources as anybody else in the country.
We didn't say it was just resources. You took it as it was just resources because we said Texas has a lot of resources, and then you said, well, if it's just about resources, then you start listing
of
off a
top five job.
It's not just about resources. But that's a huge chunk of it.
That's why I don't understand how Alabama isn't a top isn't a better job than Texas because of the success, because of the resources.
It's not far off. It's not far off, but it's not a better job. No, the only way, like, we're obviously talking circles now, we can move on. Now I want to have a national college basketball guy that's completely unbiased to three of us in this conversation to ask him, because I'm fascinated to see. I'm fairly convinced that they would consider Texas still one of the top jobs in the country. And
college basketball,
the Texas name still carries weight in college basketball. Yes.
All right, let's get to a break.
Coming up next, we're going to get to the 11 o'clock hour. We're going to talk some more college basketball. A little bit of a look down the road for both Missouri and Kansas, and the questions that obviously are out there for both coaches and both programs coming up next.